So for me, certainly, I work at Big Woman in investing in tech companies. This came as really as a surprise. I'm interested to hear from our panelists that came as a surprise as well. We started hearing about this Wednesday, right? In the sequence of events Wednesday, we started hearing about it. We tried to figure out what our exposure was to Silicon Valley Bank. Thursday, it was about 25% of the deposits leave, and Friday, the bank shut down. This came very quickly, and it's still, it feels very shaky. Regional banks feel shaky. It still feels good, I guess, on the larger banks. So start off with you, Sloan. Okay. Start with you, Jordan Blaze. How do you feel about, the banking system, and specifically regional banks? Are you doing anything differently as you run your business in this environment here?
Well, before I answer that question, first of all, I want to thank Mr. All for having me, and I'm honored to be up here with the two of you, and I just want to say that it looks to me like there's no run on deposits at Neri Sproul, and that Neri Sproul Tower is going strong, and still paying to its depositors, so it's really great to see. But back to the question. It was a very, very scary week. The last week and a half. And I hope that you've seen things settle down. Credit Suisse being bailed out by the, looks like it says UBS, but I think it's got a lot to do with the Swiss government. But I believe that hopefully it'll be confidence in the banking system. What really is scary, this is a little bit off topic, I apologize, but to me what's scary is that, as I'm sure you know, one tweet can set off a whole, yelling fire in a movie theater. And that's almost kind of what happened with Silicon Valley Bank. I'm not saying that the bank wouldn't have might not have been the strongest bank. I'm not sure that they would have gone over. And Signature was a good bank. They got involved in crypto. I think they were working really hard to dilute the effects of crypto on the bank. And I think they were doing a good job. I know a lot of the people there. They're good people, so I feel bad for them. But in any event, I really hope that we'll see things calm down. Certainly, if it doesn't, it's going to continue to have an effect on all businesses, being the real estate business and the gentleman also, it's going to have a big impact.
So, just to delve down that for a second, are you staying away from the regional banks in your business and going more to the national markets?
So, at Partner Group, we're managing other people's money. It's not just my money or the partners. We're managing billions and billions of dollars of other people's money. We have to make a decision. We have a fiduciary responsibility to make what we think is the best decision. So that is something that, where we have the significant, I would go as far as saying 99% in the major banks. I did learn something new through all this banking crisis is that there's actually something called, I don't know if you're familiar with this, called IntraFi. Are you familiar with that? Where you can make a deposit of more than the $250,000 that's insured by the FDIC, and that bank actually spreads it. There's 3,000 member banks in IntraFi, and they spread the deposit if you have more than $250,000, and they'll spread it so that all of your deposit, whether it's a million, 10 million, 100 million, and they can make it insured, which I think is very interesting.
So, John, closer to you, how has this last couple, 10 days or so, affected your business?
So we have interest in banks in the U.S. and Canada. What I just want to echo what you were saying is that this is not a credit crisis. This is a liquidity issue. And to think that it could still spur this type of chaos when we're not really dealing with the concern that we had in the past tells you how volatile the communication industry and how much concern it could create. What is going to happen is people are moving to the bigger banks, obviously, but their risk profile is much less. Like the regulators, they don't like seeing a company that's not profitable within a year. And so a lot of this 10 years, I mean, how many of us know or are involved in companies that are not profitable for 4, 5, 6 years? So the regional banks are going to have to play a role in this. In our areas of banking, thankfully we were very conservative, so we kept our liquidity like almost at 100%. Very conservative. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of regional banks that still kept a lot of cash. Just ask the question. They're going to be very honest because the FDIC is calling all these banks and asking them what their exposure is. Just ask the bankers, say, what is your liquidity ratio? How much on hand do you have? And that should give confidence because they're still going to want the business. The larger banks are not going to be able to be as flexible. So, or whatever that's worth.
Hello, can I add something? There was, I don't know how many years ago it was, but several years ago there was a commercial where a person walked into the bank and they said, I want to borrow $1 million. The banker said, I'll give you $2 million. And the borrower said, I don't want to pay more than 5%. And the banker said, I'm going to charge you 2%. And it was 2008, 2009, those of us that were around then, it was a little bit of like that. We had a joke in our company that you could, the bank would actually give you a check and have you fill it out. That's not exactly true, but it was kind of like that. The last 10 years, not like that at all. The banks have been much more prudent, much more conservative, loan to value, amortization, things such as that. Much, much more prudent. So I just think, again, I can't address some of the venture capital and private equity investments that we're making. I can tell you from a real estate standpoint, I do feel like both the larger banks as well as the regional banks were much more conservative over the last 10 years than, let's say, the previous decade.
And would you expect the legal one half now to be even more conservative? Do you think it's going to have spending of credit? Obviously, there's a big rate announcement that's going to happen this week. Bets are another quarter point to see what happens. Do you think that credit's going to get tighter now?
It's a good question, and the problem is that it will actually be somewhat of a catch-22, because even though I'm saying I think the banks have been much more conservative over the last 10 years, if they pull back, and then when we're already seeing situations now where in real estate, it's hard for borrowers to refinance out of their existing loans when they mature. So, I don't know. I hope that people will act rationally, but we'll see.
And it's still what you said before, Don, I think asking the banks what your ratios are. Do you think there's going to be more regulatory pressure on those regional banks? As we know, the larger banks post-2008 had a whole different regulatory environment. The regional banks under $250 billion were getting off a little bit easier. Do you see the regulators coming in potentially and tightening that up?
The only question is if they're going to lower the ratio of debt that you're allowed to carry. So there's pressure right now. I don't know what's going to happen, but I guess we'll see when it does.
Yeah, I think that definitely changed the way people do business here.
But I think it's also, we looked at the larger banks as risk-free, and look what happened with Credit Suisse. I mean, they're not small. So that's something to keep in mind, too.
Can we double click on that?
My compliance department won't let me say anything else. I have two people who are related to my compliance department here in the audience.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to a different topic. We'll move off banking here. Let's talk about leadership in the communities. So I think for all of us, all of us in the room here, a lot of us are in different industries, and it's difficult sometimes, especially in the beginning of your career, to really carve out time to be involved in community matters. What advice do you have, Jonathan, for someone facing this challenge, right? They're starting out a career and they're trying to balance family time, business time, and then we're adding in potentially being involved in community. How important do you think that is as people start their careers and progress in their careers?
I guess I should also show my appreciation for the yeshiva for pretty much making me who I am. I would have not ended up where I am today had I not had the supposed to be in the yeshiva. And So I just do want to have a public address, so thank you for that. I don't know which of my Rebbeim are in here, so I have to be careful when I say Rebbe, who's going to turn around. But specifically before I left Yeshiva, with Rebbe Ritzvi Berkowitz, I remember knowing that I'm going into the business world, and I had planned in advance, I knew it about a year in advance that I was going to be going, so I transitioned, actually started to learn Second Seder by myself, because I knew that if I don't know how to learn by myself, then I'm going to be in big trouble when I get out into the world, and I'm always out with Arusa. But I remember asking Rebbe, like, there's two ways this is going to work. Either I can leave Yeshiva and then call you every week when I have an issue with the cloud or with some other challenge that's going on, and it's going to be very annoying. Or if I can get shumash from you on cloud-related issues, I think that would go a little more smoothly. And I became a driver, mostly airport runs into the train station for a few months, and I picked up a lot of incredible insight. One idea that was key was I asked Ritzvi about what's a general rule in life that I can use to guide my decisions when I get into major decisions. And he said that you should look to see how you're going to be most effective and most beneficial to Klal Yisrael. And if you use that as your guiding light, it's going to help you be able to make those decisions more effectively. I think over time, what I've realized is being effective for Klal Yisrael also means being a father and a husband. And it took me time to figure that piece out, but my wife often reminds me and my kids, as many people here, that you're exponentially impactful on your community when you have a healthy family and healthy kids. And I was at the H3 conference last week, and I was speaking about, you know, similar topics about startups. And right before my talk, my son calls me, and he says, "Daddy, I have a big problem." I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I went to the candy store and I accidentally bought, I paid for 10 candies and they gave me 13. And I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I have these three extra candies." And I was so proud that that's what's happening as an impact on Klal. But the first thing I would say is that think about where you're going to be and establish that pathway. I'll give a mashal that maybe if anyone remembers the old format of the yeshiva. I remember my very first day of yeshiva when we went after Second Seder to the dining hall. I remember this very vividly. I walked out of the dining hall after supper, and I remember that there's a pathway right up to the base medrash, and then there's a pathway to the right to the dorm. And I remember standing at that corner and thinking, I've never made this choice before. Do I go to the dorm after supper, or do I go to the base medrash? And I had no baggage in the past. And I remember saying, well, whatever I decide now is going to be what I'll do for going forward. And so I walked to the base medrash. And for 10 years, that was the pathway that I took. And so I'm always cognizant of any major changes in my life. I'm always trying to think, this is a new decision point. And I try to plan way in advance so that I don't have to run into those challenges. So I moved to Houston. Before I moved to Houston, I knew my house is where I knew the Kollel is. I knew the teachers of my kids. I knew Masechta. I knew all the Masechta that I was going to have a chavrusa with. Same thing to Minneapolis. So I think really what I'm trying to say is don't wait till after the fact to try to figure out how do I now get my life improved. I think as much as you can in advance, try to think what is my life going to look like and then make those decisions early to create those pathways.
That's very good advice. Thank you. So Jordan, turning over to you, I'm going to change the question just a little bit. Involved in Klal work for a very long time, both on a national level, obviously at Norfolk. Well, how do you see, I guess, that evolving? Do you see young people getting more involved, less involved? Just tell us how you've seen that kind of progress throughout your career.
So something happened recently, as you mentioned. I live in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm very involved and have been for many, many years there. And Baruch Hashem, the community is growing, has grown, and is growing, but we have a real human resources problem. And I recently approached somebody and I said, it's time for you to step up. The older generation has been working hard for many, many years. You're an up-and-coming leader in the community. You know, it's time for you to step up. And before I said that to him, I thought to myself, he's successful, but his business is still young. He has little kids. He's busy. Maybe he's just too busy. And then I thought to myself, so was I. I also had a young business. I also had a young family. I also had young little kids. And so did this person and that person. To your question, unfortunately, to me, it feels like people are a little less involved than they used to. And I think that's something I'm not just saying this, but I guess that a lot of people here are really leaders in their community. And that's one of the reasons that they're here. But I find in general, it's not exactly the same attitude as it used to be when I was in my 30s and 40s. But I think that's something that we need to encourage. So I did approach this person, and he told me, I've got a young business, I've got a young family, I'm busy, I don't know, my wife's going to support it. And I said, if you do, I think it'll come back and it'll pay dividends for you.
So, John, I turn it back to you. We think about different organizations to get involved in, right? You've lived in Houston, you live in Minneapolis now, there's obviously a lot of local organizations to be involved in, school, et cetera. And then on a national level, right? We have a lot of great organizations that help in whether it's Yeshivas or other national organizations. How important do you think it is to get involved in both of those? Is it something that you encourage people to do both on a national level and on a community level? How do you think about that and allocating your time?
I have the luxury of having lived in out-of-town communities, so it's not the same as it is in New York. So I've heard very often, there's no way to get involved with the school or with the community organizations because they're already maxed out. So I don't know if I can tell you that where we're living in, this is a pitch for out-of-town communities. We're welcoming. Maybe we can compete for talent. But I think getting involved is very important. A lot of the young people don't know how to get involved, and so some of the people who are more senior need to involve them and engage them. They also need to know how to pass the torch, which is sort of
a problem. I think that's an excellent point about passing the torch. Sometimes that helps the younger generation step up.
Yeah, we've seen that, right? They'll complain, how come nobody's helping, but then when it comes to making big decisions, they're not invited to the table. The conversation already happened, and now all of a sudden, the flip side of it, a lot of the young guys, they sort of sometimes show up and then feel like they can just make decisions. Like, I think you have to build some credibility also. Like, if you're volunteering or you're already shown that you're engaged and want to do good, then you're going to be invited in a more meaningful way to the community. On a national basis, I mean, depends what we're talking about, the big organizations. I know that once told me that the most important organizations to support and be involved with are the major yeshivas, because the major yeshivas create most of the Talmid Chacham and the Talmidim that are going to help the future of Klal Yisrael. So being involved in the major mosques does do that. On the secular organizations, Rabbi Neuberger had a klal. You can get involved with all of them. You can get involved if it's Nishmas Klal Yisrael, if it's Gufim Klal Yisrael, not Nishmas Klal Yisrael, which meant to say an organization which is dealing with the body of Klal Yisrael, the physical needs, the poverty, the food, the issues related to the physical, then you can be engaged and be involved with them. When it comes to organizations that are dealing with the spiritual aspect of Klal Yisrael that are secular, you cannot engage with them because it makes it difficult. Now, it becomes difficult because some of them, like in Minneapolis, there's a major organization for the Federation which engages with Jewish mothers. And so I felt that's a good organization to get involved with because if we can influence within there, you can have exponential impact. Unfortunately, I was following their activities and then they hired some interesting gendered individuals that have views on Yiddishkeit, and so now I can't really meet with them. I can now encourage them I can tell them the reason I can't be involved anymore. So I think it varies, but suffice to say, having a young in the room that maintains strong Jewish values. Just last week, In Globeshire, I had a small breakfast in Minneapolis that I was invited to, and I was one of the few people with a yarmulke in the room and talking about Yiddishkeit. It was very, very impactful.
Great. So let's go on to another topic here, which would be, you know, working in the non-Jewish marketplace. So, how, I guess when you think about a young person joining the workforce in a non-Jewish place, you know, most of us have to work in a non-Jewish place. It's really interacting with non-Jewish people. How do you balance that, right? I remember in the beginning of my career, it was very difficult how to balance hanging out with them, making friends at work. You know, there has to be some kind of social inclusivity where you're going to be part of a larger, you know, firm, but yet maintain your distance in some respects because you're from Jew. So can you tell us a little, Jordan, how you've dealt with that in your career, any stories that you have maybe that would help people think about that as either their beginning of their career, even throughout their career?
So I think one of the things that you always have to remember is that I wear my yarmulke all the time. And when you're wearing your yarmulke, you're representing the Jewish people, and people know that you're Jewish. So that's one thing that is often difficult. I've been in situations before where I started to lose my temper about something, and I bit my lip and said, "Wait a second, I gotta take a step back." So it's not always easy. However, on the other hand, I think that there's a high degree of respect. Our group has different offices. Our headquarters is in Norfolk, Virginia. Most of the people in our Norfolk, Virginia office are not Jewish. Very, very few from people. We do have some other Jewish people there. They know that Friday afternoons that I'm going to be leaving early. When they hear about that I'm leaving early, that I'm not available to check my emails, I'm not available to receive phone calls from sundown to sundown, they say, "Oh, that's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I wish I could do that." So I think it works both ways. That if we're setting an example, always have to remember to do a kiddush hashem. And I think, you know, I've been in a few situations where I wondered whether somebody was treating me differently, was treating me negatively. But I have to tell you, in my career, very few times has that happened. Very few times that happened. I would say more times it's benefited me than not.
John, what about you?
I echo the same thing. I think the key question is how consistent you show up as a firm member in your office. I remember when I was living in Houston, I was working at an oil company, and I used to dress, I think the number of bands for me, I should wear a tie and jacket every day to the office. The jacket stayed, the tie I lost within a few days. But I maintained the same look, literally white shirt and black pants. So one of the lawyers one day walks over and says, "John, can I ask you a question?" "What's up, Tom?" He says, "Why do you dress like a penguin every day?" And I think it was funny for him at the beginning, but then when he saw that I was consistent and I try to maintain my composure, there's an incredible dress around Armin Lubianski quotes in the Sefer Ben-Tur for Life, which everyone's. It's a fantastic saber. And he writes there, the Pasuk says, "Mikoy Gadol, Shele Chukim Mishpatim Tzadikim," that have Chukim Mishpatim that are Tzadikim, that are wise. So he asks, Mishpatim, we understand that the Gaim are going to say that we have wonderful Mishpatim, but why? How can the Gaim say that we have Chukim that are Tzadikim? Chukim don't make sense by definition. So he says, an amazing thing, he says, if the Gaim see that the Mishpatim that we do them straight, and we're honest, and we're yashrus. If you're sitting in a room and you're wearing a yarmulke, everybody's staring at you to see how you represent. I've seen it, I experienced that. But when they see that you're yashrus there, then when they look at the chukim, the weird things that we do, that we don't go out for lunch with them, and we dress in a weird way, and we're awkward in social circumstances, when a woman comes and she puts her hand out, not pussy past judgment, If you're straight with the mishpatim, then they'll say the chukim are also tzaddikim. Then they'll say, wow, this person is so yasher. I'm sure all these weird things that they do, they have a very deep meaning. So I think really the consistency is probably the most important thing. And just today, I mean, you just see, if you wear a jacket, you automatically have the man respect. The dress code is so ridiculous now. Our office is more conservative in the Midwest. And just wearing a jacket, automatically people see that you're mashing yourself. Although the guys are also coming around to modest wear. We opened a department store, modest wear department store. Probably your wives have opened there. The address, American Dream. What's shocking is that how many non-Jewish women are now coming and shopping there, because it's becoming a new fad, modest wear. So hopefully we're on the opposite trend here.
Bringing a lot of good to the world in that way. That's great. But I think what you said is very important, and we're kind of running out of time here. So I think we'll leave it with this. But I think consistency with both of you said is very important. And the way that you think about things, the way that you act is very consistent. You're always thinking about how you're representing it in different places. I think is the most important. And when people see it and the consistency, and I remember the only time I ever had an issue in all my years working was when I worked for Carl Icahn. I worked for him for a couple of years, and he knew I was an Orthodox Jew. He knew I was from. We talked about it many times, but there was one time where he it was right before Shabbos, and he knew I was going to leave, and he said to me, "What time is Shabbos today?" And I said, "It's 5 o'clock." He's like, "I'll tell you the time of Shabbos. You're not leaving until I tell you." But knew that it wasn't really going to happen. It was just his way of saying that, because he knew there was a consistency. But I think that's really what both of you are bringing out. When you're representing what we represent in the workplace, it's a consistency and really what it stands for. So thank you to both of you for being on this panel. Hopefully it's been informative to the audience here. We appreciate everybody coming here.